I'm having playback issues, and I'm going to have to, you know what? I'm going to have to start, I'm going to have to restart the production machine, sound card issues. So please stand by, bear with me, I apologize. And I thought I was starting with a fresh restart, so I always start the week that way, and sometimes it comes back, and we don't have playback. So if you'll be so kind as to stand by, I'll be right back. Okay? Thank you.
It's showtime.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we are off and running on this first day of June, 2021. This is the Horn HeadOn.live is where you'll find us live on the interweb tubes. You know, once I get the stream going and stuff. Hi, I'm Robin, and I wasn't here for Monday, so today gets to be a Monday. Ouch. We had a perfectly beautiful day yesterday, and thank you very kindly for all of your forbearance in understanding that when I took the evening off, it had been, oh my God, Saturday and Sunday were so gloomy. I mean, it was the very definition of that Shakespearean phrase, and all the clouds that lowered upon our housetops, only they weren't in the deep bosom of the ocean buried. They were right on my freaking head. So when it turned out beautiful yesterday, Ferg looked at me and said, "Hey, Dad, you know, let's cook some food on the griddle, you know, for the Memorial Day day of remembrance." And he doesn't often say that to me. And when he did, I said, "Yeah, we're going to do that." And so we did. And like I said, I thank you for your understanding, and I appreciate the day off. I sincerely do. So it is Tuesday, as noted, the first day of June, 2021. It was nice today. Yesterday afternoon was just exquisite, just beautiful. And for those of Ferg built a fire in the fire pit and sat around it with his guitar. And for those of you who want to see it, it's over on my Facebook page. I think I also put it up at Instagram, just a little snippet. Boy can play. I think that's a line from a Dire Straits song. Yep, yeah. Walk of Life, I think, is the song. But the boy can play. And if you want to see it, like I said, Instagram, Hillbilly Elitist, at Bob Kincaid. Jesus, I hate saying that. On Twitter and Robin Kincaid on Facebook. So yesterday was lovely, and Saturday was great. It was my first trip outside my comfort zone since my big outcoming, and I went to Blacksburg to meet with Mark Levine, and it was a most pleasant occasion, and I hope he has great good fortune in his primary coming up in Virginia just 7 days away from now. Wow. And he has been crisscrossing the state and doing a heck of a job campaigning, really, really talking about trying to figure out a way to get relief from gun violence. So that's what all of that was. And then last night, because, and see, this makes sense. Last night was a beautiful day. Beautiful evening. And there wasn't a cloud in the sky. So naturally, sometime around, probably 4 o'clock this morning, power went out and stayed out. And we were sound asleep, and I didn't hear the beeping from the uninterruptible power supplies back here. And so everything shut down. And that necessitated a restart. As Lee in New York pointed out, June comes in with a system crash, goes out with a reinstall of the apps. Your pessimistic tech support person, Lee. Yeah, you were. I hope it doesn't go out with a reinstall of the apps, but there was definitely a crash, and I got everything fired back up, and I restarted, and I did a second restart, and then I had no audio. So then I had to shut it down again. This time I've got audio. Yay. I know. I caught myself on that. Brother Deacon Ace said, last night was a beautiful day. Hashtag art of word knowing. I know. I'm the only person in the world who can have her only language be her second language. I think my first language is derp sometimes. Jesus. But anyway, June is here. And May ended on an up note, and I'm really excited because as foretold, a quick review of the weather app will confirm what is always the case here in this part of Central Appalachia. The first Saturday in June is nothing short of drop-dead beautiful. And so that's what we're looking for. That's what we're looking at this week. It's going to be it's going to be busy. The briskets and the pork butts go in the brine with the seasonings tomorrow. They will brine for 24 hours. Then we smoke the butts, and then we smoke the briskets. And then there's a whole bunch of biscuit making to be done, and catfish to be grilled. And then Saturday afternoon, at Maggie's Pub, the Pride Picnic Day, and it's a fundraiser for Fairness West Virginia, and I'm just thrilled to pieces about it. I'm just delighted. So it's going to be a busy week, like I said, but I'll be here. I'll be here every evening, just like this evening, and it should be quite the adventure. I love firing up the acorn and making wonderful, wonderful, smoky, delicious food in it. Yesterday, the early part of the day, I spent pickling some Kaneka sausage, and it's ice cold in the refrigerator now, all canned up, and whoo, it's gonna be good. Oh, it's gonna be something. We'll do it because it's a pub. They got beer. What's better than beer and pickled sausage? Yes. And yes, before Jeremy gets to it, I pickled my own sausage. Okay, yeah, I said it. Anyway, every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. So we begin with thanks going out to our first day of the month subscribers, and sincere thanks to our Patreon subscribers. Because I wasn't here yesterday, we didn't get the thanks in. I traditionally do that on the final day of the month, and it was kind of a spur-of-the-moment decision to spend family time instead of coming inside, and that's okay. So we'll do that as well. Clack clack clack. And, shoot. Some days you just can't type. God, what scintillating radio. There we go. So anyway, thanks go out to our first day of the month subscribers. And that means thanks very kindly to Mark. And thanks to Tom and Sunny San Rafael. And thanks to Joseph. And thanks to Rusty. Thanks to John at Home Dirts. Thank you ever so kindly as well to thank you very much to our pal Chris in Germany, a portion of who covers a significant portion of Bruce's Memorial Challenge, and thank you to Ralph's. And special thanks, and it arrived with a note, and it's just a lovely note. See, this is real correspondence. I couldn't make these obnoxious noises on the radio if it wasn't. This comes from our pal Dennis in Columbus, who said, "The enclosed is from money I inherited from my good working-class Irish-American Catholic Democratic parents. Dad lived to be 90, Mom lived to be 95. They grew up poor during the Depression. They were FDR Democrats their entire lives. They'd be happy and proud that I'm giving money to help support the voice on the internet waves of someone who represents the other, i.e. the non-wealthy folks in our country. They'd want you to keep up your great work on behalf of the other, i.e. the rest of us. I hope the enclosed helps put a small dent in the hole we're currently facing in helping to keep the voice of the people, of people like me, in the public square of the 21st century. With gratitude for your great work, Dennis in Columbus." Thank you, Dennis. That is so touching. And well, we share a common heritage, that of being the children of FDR Democrats who wouldn't have any problem whatsoever in understanding where our country sits right now, because it sits at a crossroads that we have visited before. And I want to get into that later in the program, but thank you, Dennis. At that, because of Dennis, we finished May okay, and Dennis is part of Dennis is also part of Bruce's Memorial Challenge. So there is $300 on the table waiting to be matched, in which case your money gets doubled. 5 becomes 10, your 10 becomes 20, your 20 becomes 50, all the way up to and including 300 bucks. So it's a great way to get the month started and take a little bit of the stress off. Thank you so very much, Dennis. And so the Bruce's Memorial Challenge is, in fact, out there. And I cannot begin to thank you all enough for keeping this program on the air. It is nothing. It's a little miracle that we can exist. And y'all provide for that miracle each and every day. Thank you. By the way, yeah, Brother Deacon Asa says, then we smoke the butts, then we smoke the briskets. Quit while you're ahead, woman. Smoking butts is what got you into this predicament in the first place. Ah. Also, a big shout out to all the non-vivants who took the time to denigrate the pickled sausages on various social media. Oh, I know. Flavio says, sweet Jesus, was the sausage not good enough on its own? It's fantastic on its own. It's going to be only better now that it's been pickled. It was just, because there's a dried red chili down there, there's a crushed garlic clove, there's dill weed, there's mustard seed, and the longer it sits, the better it gets. Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Oh, I know. Billable Rick says, your producer is at the door. He wants in. Yeah, that's either Kyle or Caesar Socks. Can't decide. Well, It's probably Caesar Socks, but Lucy Purr is in the house. The boys are outside, and we played all weekend. The boys and I out there. They're just two delightful cats. I mean, if you're gonna have cats dumped on you should have the good ones, and they are. They so very much are. So I've got notes from Joey and from Ron in Raleigh and one from Paul from Parts Unknown that I'd like to get out there, as well as a note from our pal Jessica in Minnesota. So let's start with Paul from Parts Unknown. The subject line is lab leak. It has been a while since I've written in. I've just been overwhelmed with so many things going on in my life. It's hard to find the time to write. I had a great plan to call in yesterday on Memorial Day since I wasn't working, but I got caught up in something, and when it was done, it was past the end of the show, so I'm writing today instead. Calling would have been better since there's so much I wanted to talk about. I'll just try to cover the bare minimum of what I wanted to cover because there is so much. Part of what is taking up so much of my time is helping out my cousin and her sick daughter, my niece, who's been slowly dying over the past 2 months. She's been wrestling with health issues for over 3 years and has had a myriad diagnoses. And the basic problem is that her immune system is attacking her entire body and no one knows why. She went to the emergency room 3 times 2 weeks ago, and last week she finally got a hospital room for a few days and got a team of experts to really work on her and was released last Sunday. At least now she is feeling much better. The main problem was that she was in so much pain if she ate something that she would throw it up and couldn't keep anything down. She's been living off of applesauce and mashed potatoes for weeks, and now has been able to eat ground meat and is able to keep it down with about half the pain. I've been helping out by watching her dog a few days a week and taking him for a walk. She hasn't had the strength to get out of bed most days, and the large 18-month-old poodle will chew their house to pieces if he can't go on a walk and burn off energy. On top of that, working constant overtime at 45 to 50 hours and being there for my family, free time has been hard to come by. So I'm just going to limit my email to 2 topics. The first one is that I want to give Robin a break. I'm behind on podcasts, but I've heard fundraising is poor and have been hearing fundraising goals over $1,000 to catch up. I don't know where fundraising's at, but in true Seinfeld fashion, I declare this the summer of Robin. Robin's been going through a lot this year and needs a vacation. While Robin's too much of a workaholic to take a break, we can have her take a break from asking about fundraising. The point of the summer of Robin is twofold. First, the only time Robin talks about fundraising is when a listener puts forward a challenge, and she never has to say we're at X dollars and we desperately need help. She only has to say, come on, we're getting closer to finishing today's challenge. Also, Robin should never be so desperate for fun she feels the need to sing. Absolutely no singing on air during the summer of Robin. Ooh, I like that. So I'll be taking some of the extra money I've made from all that overtime to help rally for this month. We'll start with the Let the Summer of Robin Begin challenge. I'm throwing $100 into the first of these challenges. I'll match any donation today and tomorrow up to $100. The second point of the Summer of Robin challenge is to be done with monthly fundraising as early as possible. The goal is to raise as much money as we can, as fast as we can, not only to catch up to be done with June by the 20th, but the 15th would be even better, so that Robin can have a solid week or more of not worrying about fundraising and just enjoy doing the show. That's the vacation break we can give her over the summer, so that Robin can be free from worry. And the goal is to do this for June, July, and August. Horn community, let's come together and make this the summer of Robin. There's $100 on the table right now. Make it happen. Thank you. Thank you, Paul. That is an unlooked for blessing, a people blessing, which is better than any sort of metaphysical blessing from someone who doesn't have a face or a voice or a corporeal body. And it is a blessing to this network. Now, says Paul, on to COVID-19 news from the Science Lab. A reminder to new listeners, I'm a scientist who works in a lab that makes 2 of the components of the COVID-19 test kit, and we've been working hard not to let this virus enter the lab. I've been living on isolation protocol since March the 13th, 2020. I've not been allowed to eat out, even if I'm dining outdoors and following precautions. For me to be indoors with other people, everyone inside has to be masked, and I cannot be there for longer than 15 minutes. I get my temperature checked every day when I go to work. Every 2 weeks, I get tested for COVID, and I get the pleasure of sticking a giant Q-tip up each nostril as deep as I can and then twirling it around. I'm happy to say that my wife and I are fully vaccinated. We both took the Moderna vaccine and both got shots on the same days as each other. Same for Agnes and me. We both had a bad reaction to the second shot, and it took us down for 3 days. Our two-week post-second shot date, when we would be free and clear of worrying about getting infected so much, was May 19th. Last week, my work came out with new isolation protocols if you've been vaccinated. I'm allowed to be outdoors, unmasked, for an unlimited period of time with other vaccinated people, but I cannot be in a group of more than 25. I can be indoors with vaccinated people as long as everyone are wearing masks for up to an hour. My work is looking to continue changing the protocols and lightening up on the rules each month, depending on how things are looking in America. I'll keep you updated each month as things change, hopefully for the better. But they've made it clear that if things get worse, they will lock us all down again. My advice to the Horn community is if you are vaccinated, follow the same rules that I do and stay safe. Stay masked indoors with vaccinated people for no more than an hour and outdoors unmasked for as long as you want, but only up to 25 people. My family went to a friend's house for a barbecue last Sunday and spent all afternoon letting our kids play outdoors in their backyard unmasked, and it was our first social gathering, 2 weeks shy of 18 months. It has been a long year and a half. We all had a great time. Now, on to the lab leak. This is a hard subject to talk about because there's so much speculation out there, and what research I've done in the news makes little to no sense. So I'll do my best to explain things from a scientist's point of view that is trained in epidemiology and BSL lab practices. I've been waiting for this email from Paul because I felt like he would probably offer us some badly needed clarity. Hi, Clarity. On the great Chinese lab leak controversy. I'm going to put my master of analogies hat on and try to explain what I'm seeing. For this analogy, I'm hoping that the greater Horn community is experienced with Texas Hold'em style poker. To sum up, each five-card hand is made up of the two hidden cards that each player has and five face-up community cards that everyone can see and use. You have to make the best five-card hand you can from the seven cards out there. When the game begins and the flop happens, which is when the first three community cards are dealt and you can use your two hidden personal cards to see what kind of hand you have, you can begin to figure out what's going on in the highest possible hand each player could have. Now, you're playing with China, and they're holding their two hidden cards and not showing them to you. The flop shows a three of diamonds, a queen of spades, and an eight of hearts. For this analogy, the queen represents the story that six or more lab workers got infected with COVID-19 at the Wuhan Disease Research Lab. Now, all pundits, politicians, and war hawks are screaming that because of that queen, China could have a straight or a royal flush, and we need to do something about it. As a scientist and poker player, my take is we need to get more information or let the game continue as they draw the last two community cards to see if a straight flush or a royal flush is possible. The straight flush or royal flush in this analogy is China created the shittiest bioweapon ever and got it out, or they were researching something and just messing around with it and it accidentally got out and didn't come from the wet markets. At this point, I would like to address the other two community cards on the table, the Eight of Hearts and the Three of Diamonds. These are facts that don't make sense and the media doesn't talk about because it really detracts from the lab leak hypothesis. The Three of Diamonds is basically that correlation is not causation. Yes, the multiple people in the lab getting COVID-19 is troubling, but it could be that they sent one scientist out there to collect samples from animals to see if there are diseases that could hurt the general population and got it from one of the animals unknowingly and spread it to the co-workers accidentally. It would be like accusing firefighters of starting the fire that they were putting out because they have burns. Wow. Here in the United States, we have a forensic pathology lab in Ashland, Oregon. I applied for a job there once that would let you spend half the week backpacking in the deep woods collecting samples from dead animals you find, and the other half of the week in lab testing those samples for bubonic plague, rabies, and possible zoonotic infections that are monitored and steps are taken to prevent these diseases from reaching the greater populace. Perhaps something similar happened in Wuhan with a scientist with a similar job caught COVID-19 from handling a dead animal, getting a pathology sample, and accidentally brought it back to the lab. Now let's talk about the Eight of Hearts on the table, which is how BSL labs work. BSL stands for Biohazard Safety Level. You may know there are four levels of BSL, and four is the worst for movies like Outbreak, Contagion, etc. I work in a BSL 2 lab and work with human plasma and materials. Not going to go into the details of each level of BSL, but to put it simply, BSL 1 and 2 precautions are centered around protecting the scientists from getting infected. BSL 1 and 2 diseases are ones that are dangerous but already out in the populace, like HIV, hepatitis, leprosy, rabies, etc. You don't have to worry about the disease getting out, and if the scientist accidentally gets infected, there are treatments available to cure them. To work in the lab I knew now, I had to get vaccinated for various diseases like hepatitis B, which my company was kind enough and regulated enough to pay for. BSL 3 and 4 precautions are about protecting the disease from getting out into the wider world because it's currently not out there. BSL 3 diseases either do not have a high enough death rate, COVID-19, or if they're deadly but we currently have treatments and or vaccines for them, like polio. BSL 4 diseases have massively contagious and deadly ones that we have little to no treatment for, like Ebola. Any lab on Earth that is doing secret bioweapons work or working with something unknown would have at least BSL-3 protocols in place. Again, these protocols are designed to stop the disease from getting out, not to protect the scientists. Although they're protected as well, it is just not the focus. In a BSL-4, on the other hand, you are either in the full hazmat suit with your own air. In a BSL-3, you're masked at all times and stay socially distant from each other. For either level 3 or 4, you aren't allowed to be in a common break room. You eat your lunch alone in the office. Your temperature is checked every day you go in. If you get sick, you're put in isolation and quarantined immediately. Even if it's a common cold you got from your child who picked it up at school. In America, if you have possible exposure in the lab, for example, for an accidental needle stick, they put you into a federal quarantine facility nicknamed the Slammer, and you're isolated for at least 28 days and have no direct human contact. Healthcare staff enter your negatively pressurized room through an airlock and in a full hazmat suit. So the not-making-sense part is that a secret bio-research lab in China was working on a new bioweapon and accidentally or on purpose let it get away from them by the fact 6 workers got sick. How'd they all get sick? They shouldn't be near each other. Always masked. Constantly monitored. And if you get the slightest sniffle, you'll be locked down with no questions asked. It sounds way more plausible that it was standard BSL 2 or 1 lab where staff are not checked every day and share break rooms and common use areas that are not wiped down after they're done. Now bear in mind, these are U.S. protocols, not Chinese. The Chinese protocols might be different, and if they are, I would wager, given China's history, they would be even more careful and paranoid about disease than the U.S. So again, it makes no sense currently without more evidence or, from the Texas Hold'em analogy, more cards on the table. It is possible for China to have had that straight or royal flush, but they have to have the right cards in their hand, and the next 2 cards of evidence have to be on the money. The odds of the straight flush coming together for China are fairly rare from what I see on the table right now. Also, a quick note about building a bioweapon. Most weapons are built by using existing genetic traits from other diseases to enhance what you're making, rather than making it from scratch. As far as I know, making it from scratch doesn't exist on a workable level yet. So borrowing from other diseases is what you do. For example, measles can last up to 2 hours in the air after the infected person has left. You could identify these genes and give them this trait and copy and paste them into your bioweapon. Having other diseases' genetic code on a virus stands out like using a previous recording of a Prince song as a backup sample on your new song. It might be good music, but Prince's voice sticks out like a sore thumb, and you don't need a sound expert to tell you that's Prince. We found nothing like that in the COVID-19 genetic code, as far as I know. That's all I have time for. I hope it helps. Don't forget the Summer of Robin Challenge and the $100 Let the Summer Begin Challenge. More to follow, and I encourage more listeners to come up with their own challenges in the spirit of the Summer of Robin. Last note. Be careful out there. My work site has about 200 people, and it's small enough that we all know each other. One of our coworkers got exposed outside of the site, and they've been hospitalized for weeks on a ventilator. We hope that this person pulls through, but if it can happen to us when we're being careful, it can happen to anyone. Remember, the vaccine is your last line of defense, not your first. Be healthy, be well, and be careful, Horn community. Wow. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, Paul. because that makes... Well, it's making points that I was trying to make and not making nearly as clearly as Paul just did. And there is tremendous risk. Perhaps some don't see it, but there is tremendous risk in the mad drive to find some reason to blame someone besides Donald Trump for what this disease has done in the United States. And wherever else we have sent it to. The fact that nearly 600,000 people are dead is at his doorstep and his doorstep only, and any energy that we expend, and there was a recent story that said his staff worked hammer and tongs trying to come up with ways to blame China for something that got loose in China, but shows no evidence of being a matter of intentional behavior. Again, 19 million people in the greater Wuhan metropolitan area, and 99% of us had never even heard of Wuhan, even though it's a huge city that dwarfs New York, for fuck's sake. It's not even one of the biggest cities, I'd warrant. And the fact that up to six people in that lab got sick? No. So thank you, Paul, and thank you for the challenge. So the Summer of Robin, Let the Summer Begin challenge for this first day of June is on the table. And thank you to Paul, and he's being really ambitious, thinking that we could be done with fundraising for June by the middle of the month. That would be astonishing, and it would also be wonderful. So thank you again, Paul from Parts Unknown. As to the lab leak theory, Flavio pointing out, consider the source, the Wall Street Journal, which is owned by Murdoch. The worst is that the liberal media is stoking that fire, too, because they are, after all, the for-profit media, and we live in an age where, as it has always been, if it bleeds, it leads, only now if it sneezes, it leads, too, or coughs dryly, or loses its sense of taste and smell. So, that. Continuing onward, back as most programs here begin, the greatness of Greenwood. Robin! I'm proud of you for taking a page out of Giraffe's book and hitting the campaign trail over in Virginia this weekend. Thank you, Joey and Giraffe. We need all the good lieutenant governors we can get in places, because in places like Texas and Ohio, there are two really bad ones. As I've noted in the past, we have Husted here in Ohio, and in the last 10 years, this anti-American asshole's kicked over a million minorities off the voting rolls. Jeffrey with a campaign contribution.
Yes, thank you, Robin. That's the spirit, and I would like to thank Dems in Texas. Last night, Democrats down in Texas acted courageously and for the moment have stopped Lieutenant Lackey Dan Patrick and Governor Greg Goebbels Abbott from installing his Third Reich racist voting regulations. Great job, y'all. Stand tall and fight the fascists.
So, Robin, Jeffrey, and I were wondering if you were anywhere near Loudoun County, Virginia, where there was a moran spotted in a school district just outside of Washington, D.C.? No, I was down in southwest Virginia because Mark and I were talking about mountaintop removal. Leesburg Elementary School teacher Byron Tanner Cross told the county school board that the use of preferred gender pronouns for transgender students was against his religion, and he would only use the pronoun that he deemed appropriate. Well, you can imagine Giraffe's going to be all over this one.
Somebody should tell this Cross character to leave his cross at home and stop bringing his religion into school, because I think he's crossed the lines. Somebody should suggest to Byron the moran that he might want to do some serious examination of his religion, which pertains to the cross. You could call it cross examination.
Oh, okay.
Because I'm quite confident that the book, the Bible, which he endorses, is not factual, and that cross that he worships, wait for it, is that cross that he worships has some serious holes in it. At least three. 100 years ago today, which, and this is yesterday and today, the deadliest racial massacre in U.S. history began in the thriving Greenwood African-American community of Tulsa, Oklahoma, better known as Black Wall Street by far the most economically successful African-American community in the country at that time, was destroyed by a mob believed to be closely associated with the Ku Klux Klan. In 1921, Oklahoma had a racially, socially, and politically tense atmosphere. Many servicemen had returned following the end of the First World War in 1918, and the American Civil War, which ended in 1865, was a still-living memory. Civil rights for African Americans were lacking, and the Ku Klux Klan was resurgent thanks to a widely popular 1915 film called The Birth of a Nation, based on a book called The Klansman. Tulsa, as a booming oil city, supported a large number of affluent, educated, and professional African-American people, and this was not about to be tolerated by the Southern racist bigots of the day. Not even the Jim Crow laws of the day instituted by this young state of Oklahoma impeded the success of Black Wall Street, so an intentionally organized uprising was the only way to stop the greatness of Greenwood. The massacre began during the Memorial Day weekend after 19-year-old Dick Roland, a black shoeshiner, was accused of assaulting Sarah Page, this is always how they begin, a 17-year-old white elevator operator in the nearby Drexel building. Can you say Emmett Till? Yes. The accused black man, Dick Roland, was arrested and being held at the courthouse when rumors spread that Roland was about to be lynched. Both black and white protesters converged at the courthouse when a gunshot was heard, and then, according to the sheriff, all hell broke loose. At the end of the firefight, 12 people were killed, 10 white and 2 black. As news spread throughout the city, mob violence exploded. In the end, 150 to 300 African Americans were confirmed dead or missing, and approximately 50 whites were dead. About 10,000 black people were left homeless, and property damage amounted to more than $150 million in real estate and $750,000 in personal property, which in today's dollars would be equivalent to about $32.65 million, Joey says. Many survivors left Tulsa, while both black and white residents who stayed in the city kept silent about the terror, violence, and resulting losses for decades. The massacre was largely omitted from local, state, and national histories. Gee, isn't that what's currently going on in Texas under Governor Goebbels not wanting to teach black history? In 1996, 75 years following the massacre, a bipartisan group in the state legislature authorized the formation of the Oklahoma Commission to study the Tulsa Race Riot of 1921. The commission's final report, published in 2001, states that the city had conspired with the mob of white citizens against the black citizens, and the massacre became a part of the Oklahoma school curriculum. Imagine that. Actually teaching real history in the South. Jeffrey and I can only wonder if a bipartisan group would have come together to examine the January 6th uprising at the Capitol building. I think we know exactly what we'd find. And that is a whole group of Republicans in the House and Senate, led by Donald Trump, conspired to take down democracy at the Capitol that day. And so we will add to the $100 on the table the $10 Greatness of Greenwood Challenge. And this Titanic Tuesday, the 1st of June, we have a French connection, Joey adds. Jeffrey explains, yes, on this day, Charleston Livingston Seagull was forced out of retirement to run the country of France. Apparently, Seagull was tired of all the materialism. No, Jeffrey. He gets a little ahead of himself sometimes. That happens with giraffes on long necks. Jeffrey, you're thinking of Charles de Gaulle, who became the premier of France in 1958, marking the beginning of the end of the Fourth Republic. In 2003, leaders of the world's 7 wealthiest nations and Russia pledged billions of dollars to fight AIDS and hunger on the opening day of their summit in Evian, France. Jeffrey concludes, and in 2017, President Trump declared he would pull the U.S. from the landmark Paris Climate Agreement. Joe Biden signed an order returning the U.S. to that accord on his first day in office down in Paris, Texas, because those Texans are really concerned about climate change and the environment. It was a great day in good old Grand Prairie, Texas. Gay Paris. Grand Prairie. Okay. This has been Joey's Journal for Titanic Tuesday, the first day of June 2021, with Giraffery saluting the last survivor of the Titanic on this day as Milvina Dean. The last survivor of the 1912 sinking of the Titanic died in Southampton, England, on this day in 2009. Ms. Dean was, at the time, 97 years old. And so, add
to the Greatness of Greenwood Challenge, a $10 Titanic Sink Challenge, meaning there's $120 in challenges out there, plus Bruce's Memorial Challenge for a total of $420, with which, if we could match it, would make a great beginning for this Summer of Robin. I don't quite have the ego for that, but, well, Paul named it and put it forward. So there we are. If we can raise $420. Hey, $420. That would be fantastic. And Jude has gotten us started. Thank you so much, Jude. We are now $90 away from the Summer of Robin Challenge. And we will deal with it all as we go forward. Maybe we should start on Bruce's Memorial Challenge, and then, because today and tomorrow, Paul said, for the Summer of Robin Challenge. So let's say there's $290 to go on Bruce's Memorial Challenge. Thank you. Thank you very kindly, Jude. And then, again, dealing, because I don't think it's possible to spend too much time on something like Greenwood and the massacre of and displacement of an entire thriving African-American community. Yeah, this is what they're talking about. We don't want to teach no critical race theory. Well, we have to. We can't go on. We cannot pretend that what happened didn't happen. So Ron in Raleigh writes, history doesn't repeat itself, but it damn sure rhymes. I wish, Ron says, I was as cogent a writer as Lady B or Sandra and others, as Hedley Lamarr says in Blazing Saddles. My mind is a whirling miasma of thought. I'll try to bring my thoughts into a reasonable form. Today is the 100th anniversary of the second day of the Tulsa race massacre, and I've noticed a lot of parallels between the other race massacres. The first parallel is that no one was ever held to account for the death and destruction. No reparations were awarded. When the Greenwood area was destroyed by a white mob, more than $2 million in 1921 dollars was destroyed, looted, and stolen. Wealth is generational. When Greenwood's wealth was destroyed or stolen, that wealth went to the rioters. Now the centennial white Oklahomans can't seem to understand that reparations to the descendants is deserved. The same thing is true of all the race massacres. How much black wealth was stolen and accrued to white rioters from the Wilmington, North Carolina massacre in 1898, the multiple riots during the Red Summer of 1919. Another commonality between the race massacres is that they have the same proximate cause. A young black man is accused of molesting or raping a white woman, and a mob of white men arm themselves, march to the black areas, and burn and murder with impunity. Emmett Till was lynched for the same reason. No one was punished for any of these incidents. In Tulsa, hundreds of black bodies were pushed into mass unmarked graves, which parallels what Nazis did to murdered American GIs and Jewish concentration camp bodies 20-plus years later. The same depraved mindset was at play. I believe that the reason that Republicans don't want critical race theory or the 1619 Project used as teaching material is because of the shame that white people feel about the cruelty their forebears visited on the black people in their towns and cities. The same can be said about the Japanese citizens during World War II who, while interned, had their land and wealth that was stolen by their white neighbors. The Japanese were luckier than black people because they weren't killed wholesale, and they did receive a piddling effort to pay reparations. There's so much more to write about, but it all starts to run together. 100 years and the root problem of white supremacy is still the basis of America's inability to manifest fairness in its dealings with its minority citizens. So much truth. So much truth, Ron, and thank you for that. Which brings me to what and Ron alludes to it, the Red Summer of 1919 and then 1921. It was a year, 1921 was a year of wilding. White supremacy allied with white corporate avarice came together in that year to horrifying results. Absolutely horrifying results. And it took the form of Tulsa, and then in another part of the country. And there's a commonality here in both Tulsa and in southern West Virginia. Airplanes were used to bomb innocent human beings, to much greater horror in Tulsa than in southern West Virginia, but they are both the function of what happens when a country is, when the government is given into the hands of conservative Republicans, and those self-same conservative Republicans get the bit in their teeth. And what began in 1921 would continue throughout that decade until the wilding had gone so far that they destroyed the economy of the United States of America and immiserated tens of millions of American citizens, immiserated the ones who didn't outright die. As both Joey and Ron alluded to, the resurgence of the Klan plays a big role in this. President Ulysses S. Grant had used his executive powers to root it out and to quash it, and it stayed quashed until there was a new dominant adult generation who didn't learn their history or didn't even want to know it. And so there we are, and here we are. This is what happens when vicious white American conservatism gets to have its way. And to talk about Greenwood as something exclusively in the past is a horrible, horrible, horrible mistake. Because it is still in the present. Largely by virtue of the fact that while we understand that white people who are deprived of their wealth have a right to sue, well, we seem to have a harder time understanding that those same principles apply for recompense and reparation in minority communities. And dear God Almighty, I mean, we're kind of bundling up Moran Monday and Titanic Tuesday together this first day of June. But the right-wing for-profit media are going hand over fist to try to explain why it is that that doesn't matter. That simply stealing wealth from a marginalized group and keeping it stolen, well, that's okay. And so it is that we have over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda a creep with whom I am unfamiliar by the name of Will Kane, who is absolutely incensed at the idea of actually paying back the descendants of the people who were murdered and robbed in the Tulsa massacre. Well, it's wrong, I tell you. It's just wrong.
I think we need to do the history, go to the history of this, and go back and figure out how much every family member is owed in that city. Some of the family members there don't even have the remains of their loved ones. It's just buried, and buildings have been built over it. The mayor there has been trying to do some research on this. He's a Republican. His name is Bynum, and he's been leading the charge. And he said, look, a lot of the people that are in this town are so behind because of their heritage and where they came from, and because we have not paid that debt. So do we need generalities of saying everybody needs reparations? I don't think that's the best solution, but figure out what.
And this, by the way, is not Mr. Kane. This is a guy who's actually making sense.
what government said they owed, yeah, they need to pay that back. That's the American way.
You know, they're still alive that, that suffered through that.
You know, there is a needle that this country has to thread when it comes to race relations. And it is outlined in your thoughts just right there, Lawrence. And that is this. We need to be able to reconcile ourselves, acknowledge our past, acknowledge the sins that we have committed as a country. At the same time,
At the same time, we don't want to pay for it. I mean, let's all sing. Can't we all just sing Kumbaya and move on? Can't we just do that?
Undercut the underlying principles of what made America a unique experiment on the face of this earth. The principles of the United States of America are not at fault, but the modern day movement of race.
Hold on there, genius. The principles of American government are at fault because this government, the principles upon which it was founded, were white supremacy, period. Okay? End of discussion. It's all over the Constitution like a duck on the June bug. White supremacy was the operating philosophy that motivated the framers of the Constitution. They knew how desperately important it was that they maintained a failed economic system of slavery in the South. And they knew that the Southern power brokers would not go along otherwise. That's why the anti-slavery language had to come out of the Declaration of Independence in 1776 as well. The plantation economy was a dead-on-arrival failure that was kept on life support by stolen labor and stolen lives. So this genius over there at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda is wrong from jump. Ain't the goddess good, says Steve in New York. The goddess of irony possessed Will Kane, who played the man who fought for truth, justice, and the American way. You know, Superman. Oh, my. How about that? But he's not done burbling his stupidity.
Relations and race reparations is to undercut the very idea of America, and I'm not overstating that.
Yeah, you are. If you say you're not, that means you know you are. To pay reparations undercuts the meaning of America? That's only if America is a what? A felon state? A bully state? A larceny state?
Underlying principles of what made America a unique experiment on the face of this earth. The principles of the United States of America are not at fault, but the modern day movement of race relations and race reparations is to undercut the very idea of America. And I'm not overstating that. Mm-hmm. It's in fact to undercut often the ideas of Western civilization, reason, objectivity, not to live my truth, but to live.
Reason and objectivity are principles of Western civilization? White boy much? So I guess Asian cultures didn't have reason and objectivity, and African cultures didn't have reason and objectivity, and indigenous cultures in the Western Hemisphere didn't have reason and objectivity. That is solely and exclusively the province of white Western civilization. You know, that same Western civilization that turned Europe periodically into an abattoir for 2,000 years.
The truth. And as we move forward into history, move into the future, we need to reconcile that history. We need to acknowledge it.
Yep.
But we cannot sacrifice the very founding principles of the United States of America.
We can't sacrifice the 3/5 clause. We can't sacrifice Jim Crow. We can't sacrifice slave patrols. Because those are founding principles of America. We can't sacrifice stolen labor. We can't sacrifice stolen lives because they've already been sacrificed.
Individuality and things like reparations on a general scale undercut those foundations because they deny individuals and they assign you to groups and they make you guilty for the sins of your forefathers and they make you beneficiaries for the victimhood of your forefathers.
Dude over there that made the sane counterpoints, yeah, he's doing some, and that, sounds an awful lot like bless your heart and God love you and, right. This is so pathetically obvious. No one is visiting the sins of the father upon the children. But you know what? It is not that hard to acknowledge and apologize. It's not that hard to do. It's not that hard to know history and to know and knowing history to know regret. Is it possible that history could have somehow been different? Well, that's the parlor game that historians like to play. But history happened, and it was real, and it wasn't some constant leave it to Beaver in a powdered wig thing that the intellectual children of conservative right-wing ideology so desperately want it to be. It was brutal, and it was bloody, and it was awful, and it was, in many instances, reprehensible. But they are not intellectually mature enough, they are not spiritually mature enough to be able to acknowledge that. And just like no chain is any stronger than its weakest link, white, conservative America is this country's weakest link, because they are fragile, and they are dainty, and they are delicate, and they have such fine, fine, fine feelings of love and patriotism for a country whose history isn't what they think it is. They are in love and adoring of a fantasy, and they cannot bear up under the shame of reality. It's shame. Ronnie Raleigh was right. It's shame. I can deal with it. I can say that just because my forebears were away, I don't have to be. DNA isn't destiny. We can be better than this, but there's a hell of a lot of people, and they vote Republican, who don't want to be better than their forebears. They don't want to grow. They don't want this to be a more perfect union. They want their guns and their Bibles. And they want their guns to back up that Bible that they believe in that doesn't say what they think it says. Jesus.
When the real way to move forward in this country is to look at each other through our eyes, to our souls, to our character, as individuals. And I'm afraid this country is looking to make up for the sins of the past by sacrificing our principles and our future. And
I'll tell you what, we're not going to have a future in this country if we give back what was stolen. Maybe I did. I'd see the day when Republican ideology was defined as making America a great big fence for stolen lives and goods and looking the other way. You ever been to the Great Wall of China? No, but I know a big fence in Chicago. Ugh. Megan says, whenever I hear a white boy utter the words reason and objectivity, I hear whatever white boy deems to be reason and objectivity, but is really whatever point of view serves me best, because I'm completely incapable of understanding my own emotional triggers and cannot do any self-reflection to even try to understand possible prejudices that are influencing my own viewpoint. Sorry if I sound harsh, Megan says, but I'm sick to death of hearing any white man bitching about loss of Western civilization because it's become a dog whistle for them whining, the world doesn't center around them and only them anymore. And never has. They created a mythology that said that it does. Right down to the creation of the concept of race itself. That somehow there are different species within the single human species, and some species are better than other species, and all animals are equal, but some animals are more equal than others. Thank you, George Orwell. Megan's right. Steve in New York points out, the meaning of America is, that is nothing but blather, bullshit, and intellectual masturbation masquerading as cogent thought. Exactly. You get the idea that Will Cain here has a constant loop of Lee Greenwood singing God Bless the USA running forever in his brain. You know, this was the Memorial Day weekend. And I've remarked in the past that one of the things that we think about, I'm sure other regions are similar. But in the way I was raised, people who were long dead were talked about as if they'd just gone to the store. Their lives were a presence in the lives of the people talking about them. And so every year when Memorial Day comes around, because it is personal, I think about the two young men who didn't come home from Europe, who died fighting the same kind of political vulgarity that currently infects the country they fought to fucking save. And there are, and it's not a religious thing, but I to me, when I remember them, they partake a little bit more in their eternity. Memory is eternity. And I'm pretty sure, I don't know what they were like. They may have been steeped in the white supremacy of the time. But I know that my father's brother had gone, as my father did, into the coal mines with African-American men and worked side by side with them, and they all came out the same. They came out of the mine at the end of the day the same color. So I'd like, that's my own little fantasy. That's my own little personal myth. But it may not be true. And I have to cope with that. But that little diatribe from this Will Cain character, well, that was delivered for a specific audience for a specific purpose. Because each and every day, Emery and Marvelline, sitting there in their matching Barca loungers in the Ballerina Swan Lake Trailer Park and Country Club, turn on Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, and before they even touch the clicker, they've begun to shake in fear and anger, because they're tuning in for their daily fix of fear and anger. Flavio with a note, American principles. Quote, when the Anglo-Saxon wants something, he just takes it. As quoted, Flavio tells us, by Mark Twain. Yeah. You know, visionaries are like that. He knew the time in which he lived, and he knew the people with whom he shared a country and a planet. Stephen New York says, as to Tulsa, here's something that we need to understand about Tulsa. This was not a massacre. It was more than that. This was a textbook example of a genocide. Too often people use that term too loosely and too flippantly. It requires the intent to destroy an ethnic population, whether entirely or just part of it. In short, killing a million people doesn't have to be a genocide. While the Iraqi war was not genocidal, it was a violation of the crime of aggression. That's a term of art in international criminal law. Conversely, the killing of a single person could be a genocide. Tulsa was the intent to destroy an ethnic population on account of that ethnicity. That's genocide. What does it say about me, Steve adds, when I hear shit like this from Will Cain, I literally, no bullshit, find myself unable to even know what they are saying. I'm not saying I understand but don't agree. I literally don't even know. I don't speak a word of Urdu. This effectively sounds like that to me. It ceases being English, Steve. It And that's because you listen for content and meaning. And that was devoid of anything but patriotic drivel that, again, motivates the aforementioned people who tune in and buy shit. Because that is the only purpose of the for-profit media, to deliver viewers or listeners into the tender mercies of corporate consumerist America. And they do so by dog whistling and bell ringing the bigotries that motivate the people who tune in. And one more thing from Ron in Raleigh. I believe that in Tulsa and Wilmington, the descendants of murderers still live in those cities. It should be fairly easy to identify those folks from birth records, family Bibles, and such. After the riots, these folks put forth a concerted effort to cover up what they had done, and now their descendants shrug their collective shoulders and say it wasn't us. They may hop up on the cross, but they're just as quick to take themselves off the hook. And again, I think that goes, the guilt runs parallel with shame. And they know that some degree of their family's wealth, however we define it, is stolen. And it contributed to their well-being. This ain't rocket science. It's just history. And it's just reality. And while we are on the topic of horrors, shall we say, a little something that ran under the radar, maybe because it has to do with Canoodlia. No offense to our Canoodlian contingent. But there was a revelation of yet another horror perpetrated by white Canadians, deeply religious white Canadians, against the indigenous population of that country. The remains of 215 children, some as young as 3 years old, have been found buried on the site of what was once Canada's largest indigenous residential school, one of the institutions that held children taken from families across the nation. In reading about this, further reading about this, I saw a quote on a friend's page from Wisconsin. That included testimony from an indigenous elder who talked about being a child at one of these residential schools, whose purpose was to so thoroughly destroy indigenous culture that any reference to their indigenous nature, their indigenous heritage, would cause the children who had gone to those schools to feel nothing but unbearable shame at being indigenous. And the individual giving the testimony talked about being a little boy and looking out a window at the school by night and seeing Roman Catholic priests carrying burlap bags with little indigenous babies, children of women who had been raped by the Roman Catholic priests, often girls who had been raped, and taking their babies from them, putting them in a bag, and throwing them in the lake. That's Canada. We did it here, too. I remember being young and reading about the remarkable talents and skills of Jim Thorpe, who went to the Carlisle Indian School and played college football and was the greatest athlete of the century, so said at one time. Canada had those schools. We had those schools. And the horrors, as this article points out, are still coming to light. Because, as it says in Genesis, the blood of Abel cried out from the ground. Imagine the cries of 215 children, at least. And so you've got Catholic priests running schools and the like, doing that in the new world, so to speak, because they were doing the same thing back home in Ireland. Chief Roseanne Casimir of the Tkemlips Tisikpimik, doing my best here, First Nation, said in a news release that the remains were confirmed last weekend with the help of ground-penetrating radar. More bodies may be found because there are more areas to search on the school grounds. She described the discovery as an unthinkable loss that was spoken about but never documented at the Kamloops Indian Residential School. And it went on, and it went on, and it went on from the 19th century until the 1970s. It was mandatory for over 150,000 First Nations children to attend state-funded Christian schools because it was the stated goal of the Canadian government of the time to assimilate into Canadian society. They were forced to convert to Christianity, not allowed to speak their native languages. Many were beaten and verbally abused, and up to 6,000 are said to have died. And back in 2008, it caused some controversy because the Canadian government apologized and said that physical and sexual abuse, they admitted it, that it was rampant in the schools. Children taken away from their parents, taken away from their customs, that destroys a human being and reduces human beings to shells of their former selves. Over 5 years ago, there was a Truth and Reconciliation Commission whose report said that there were 3,200 children who had died of abuse and neglect. There were at least 51 deaths at the Kamloops School alone between 1915 and 1963, but now we know that the number is at least 215 and likely climbing. Terry Teagee, Assembly of First Nations Regional Chief for British Columbia, said, "This really resurfaces the issue of residential schools and the wounds from this legacy of genocide towards Indigenous people." The Premier of British Columbia, John Horgan, said he was horrified and heartbroken. He said it was a tragedy of unimaginable proportions. Legacy of genocide towards Indigenous people. I think he's using the word correctly, Steve, in New York. Because the mythology, whether it be Canada or the United States, the mythology of a vast and empty wonderland just waiting for white people to conquer it has to be supported at all costs. God. Now, what was that about the legacy of objectivity and civilization of Western civilization, reason and objectivity? Anybody want to explain to me the reason and objectivity involved with murdering Indigenous children? Ron in Raleigh says, "I'm glad you mentioned it. The Carlisle PA school was the template that the Canadians used to set up their residential schools. They visited the Carlisle school to see how it was done. Eugenics to the Nazis, Indigenous predation to the Canadians." And what was that? What was that Will Cain said about the founding principles of this country not being at fault? Which founding principles would those be, you little white-winged, fragile, dainty snowflake, you? You know, asking for a whole bunch of blood crying out from a whole bunch of ground. And Pope Frank, Darlene in Connecticut, adds, is getting kudos, I guess, for changing church or canon law to sanction priests that commit adult sexual assault. Sanction? What is that? Doesn't sound like jail time to me. Could it mean castration? Probably not. No, I mean, it means they have to say 500 Hail Marys and promise never to do it again. And the bitterness and the cynicism is almost unavoidable. Jeremy in Vermont, subject line Canada, but Robin, it's just God's love. And ain't it fucking great? Prince of Peace, y'all. Principles, Jack in Shreveport says, the conservatives often use that term, but they use it in a number of different contexts. One way they use it is to label the fundamental philosophical biases at play in the foundation of the U.S. I might recognize what they say when they state that something is one of their first principles, but I couldn't write out a list of what they are. It seems like what they state are their first principles. Liberty! Sit, liberty, sit. Woof. Can change, and the meaning they assign to those statements can be fluid as well, just as practically everything they say flows to a meaning convenient for whatever their current purpose calls for. White supremacy all the way down to the ground. Thank you, Charlene in Rogues Island. Thank you so very much. We are now down to 265 on Bruce's Memorial Challenge. Thank you, Charlene. Thank you so much. Summer of Robin. How about that? Canada's treatment of the First Nations people. Steve in New York says, a friend of mine and I spoke about this Sunday night. It's things like this that when I hear about the politeness, etc. of Canadians, I cringe. Honestly, it's not true. Canadians actually have a much more nefarious history of treatment of the First Nations people. I'm sorry, but Canada, even now, is no better than we are or were. Well, we all come from a common, we came largely from a common place, white people. And there's a long and bloodthirsty history where we came from, and we brought it with us. That seemed fairly obvious. I had another piece of correspondence. And this came from our pal Jessica in Minnesota. Things were going so fast that Jessica didn't get to ask a follow-up question during this past Friday on the front porch. Originally, Jessica had said, is it rutting season? And this ties in with something, a note that I received from our dear friend Nidia, who was concerned with the Robin, you're a 10 remark last week. And I read it and took it to mind. And so I will simply say, Nidia, I read your note, and I appreciate the thought that went into it. And it dovetails with something that Jessica was observing, and I kind of was too. I didn't get a chance to ask my follow-up question Friday after my initial inquiry of, is it rutting season, Jessica notes. I was going to ask, as blue is the color associated with the Democratic Party and the boys were being overly frisky, is it safe to assume an epidemic of blue balls in the Horn family congregation? And then there's Darlene. And by the way, the subject line of this note is Darlene and where the fuck is the saltpeter? Then there's Darlene, who balanced things out and provided a bit of positivity to the day, informing us of her acquisition of her beautiful Wanda the Honda. And Scarlet read at that. Chris made the allusion to WandaVision. I think that was actually Randy.
if she posted pictures in the chat and it was apropos, as Wanda Maximoff is the Scarlet Witch in the Marvel Universe. Not to mention all the electronic sorcery Darlene said Wanda is equipped with, so Wanda is indeed a fitting name. We were pressed for time, but I wanted to give Darlene a bit of encouragement in learning how to use the hand controls. I've mentioned a few times that I was legally blind until I was 16, and I received my restricted driver's license at 18. I suffered the joys of driving a litany of wonderfully underpowered vehicles equipped with at best lethargic automatic gearboxes until I inherited the 1998 Jeep Grand Cherokee Laredo. It still wasn't perfect, but it was the best performing vehicle I'd ever driven to that point. True driving excellence didn't come until 2016 when I experienced Farfignugen, and Sabine came into my life. Sabine was my 2005 Volkswagen Golf GTI, 1.8 turbocharged four-cylinder and five-speed standard gearbox. And here's where things are applicable to Darlene, as I could not drive my GTI home. I couldn't drive a standard. I'd become so unhappy of underperforming cars that a few years previous I'd started toying with the idea of buying a cheap piece of junk with a manual just to learn, and when I found this one, it was perfect. So at age 38, I had my first real lessons driving stick. And I can't tell you how many times I stalled out driving around that cramped parking lot practicing shifting, but I can tell you I was the neighborhood entertainment for a week practicing hill starts. My hometown is in the Driftless area of southeastern Minnesota. And there is a Driftless area of Wisconsin as well, which I once briefly saw. As to the Driftless, Terry would be so happy and excited with the geology here. Oh, it is. It's fantastic. And it's so hilly, it makes San Francisco look like flat Iowa prairie land. Yes, there was many an occasion when I was rolling backwards with the engine at high revs as I tried to get the technique for holding the hill with the clutch and then feathering the accelerator enough to get power to go uphill. But after that week, I was confident enough in my ability to drive my GTI around town to run errands and within 3 weeks trips out of town. I even took her into the heart of the heart of the greater Rochester Metropolitan Co-Prosperity Sphere in downtown, stop-and-go traffic, and nimbly up the parking structures. She absolutely made driving fun. Sadly, she suffered a gearbox failure, and at the time I couldn't afford to fix her, so I sold her to another Volkswagen enthusiast. We'll take good care of her. I'm back to driving an underpowered, sluggish automatic, but believe me, as soon as I can find a manual to trade in on, I will. But if I can learn to competently operate a five-speed manual at 38, I have complete faith that Darlene will just as easily learn how to operate her hand controls. So I'm giving a $5 donation in celebration of Darlene getting Wanda the Honda. And hopefully the boys have worked things out of their systems, but if not, here's my $10. Where the fuck is the saltpeter challenge? And once again, best of luck to Darlene. And if the boys don't cool their jets, it'll be the spironolactone and estradiol challenge next time. Ooh. I know what that means. Oh, yes, I do. So thank you for that, Jessica. Thank you so very much. And there is so much input to the program, so much feedback. And it just thrills me to no end. And with that... I will add a note that came in from Matt in San Francisco, going back to what Paul from Parts Unknown was writing about. We know no more, subject line, desperate in Donald Land. We know no more about the origins of the virus, period. Yet the powers that be are desperate to push a narrative that it came from a lab and therefore COVID Caligula was right? So that will whet the appetite of the followers. Then couple that with the downplaying of the insurrection, and we have the beginning of the resurrection of 45's reputation. And I will add parenthetically and editorially that he will be back on the stump this coming Saturday, June the 5th. I am so thrilled that I will be busy cooking and feeding people, and there will be karaoke and a DJ dance party later. And I'm just,
I'll deal with it in the clips on Sunday morning, but ugh. But yeah, it's the resurrection, and this is a test case because he hasn't endorsed any of the candidates who are seeking to replace Richard Burr, who is calling it quits and hanging it up. And that's probably because his daughter-in-law is still thinking about running for the Senate seat from North Carolina. I can hear the shrieks and groans among other people from Ron and Raleigh from here. So it's all going to test whether or not he still has the magic. And he's still being treated with entirely two kid gloves. And has not been driven from the public sphere because the Republican Party is nothing without him now. By the way, it's been a while. Still haven't seen... Have there been any poll quotes from genuine, committed, conservative Republican Dick in a Wig Cheney excoriating her Republican counterparts in the Senate who stopped the January 6th commission? Has that had anybody? Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I just missed it. But I went looking a couple of times over the weekend. Still nothing. Still crickets. Which tells me everything. But to get back to what Matt in San Francisco wrote. So let's play along and say it did come from a lab. So that's one thing that Donald accidentally got right. And if that is the case, then he must have really been telling the truth those 22,000 other times instead of lying continuously. The mental gymnastics to get to that place would warrant a gold medal in the Idiot Olympics. And that is definitely the Idiot Olympics. I really wish people, Matt says, would just conduct their studies quietly and only discuss the finding once they have actual proof. All this hot air just keeps the anti-Asian narrative going and puts people like my in-laws in greater danger from angry white folks who want to beat up Asian folks in the name of 45. Please, can we just give it a rest? I don't know. I don't know if we want to. Yes, I left out the at the end of Sabine. Sabina. Sorry about that, Steve in New York. One pronounces the German Sabina. There are no silent letters in German. I know. I should know this, because I'm the little obsessive compulsive who, whenever she hears somebody say Porsche, I cringe and yell wherever it is I am. It's a two-syllable word, Porsche. Yeah, we regret the error. And Steve from Georgistan with a note. Fox News and the insurrection. I took one for the team and tuned into Fox News Sunday. I wanted to see how they were going to report on these treasonous Republicans and their lack of willingness to support a bipartisan committee to investigate the insurrection of January 6th. Well, Chris Wallace was out, so he was replaced by some blonde fembot from Fox and Fiends that they snagged off the crotch couch. They're interchangeable. Here's how they're going to report on it, my friend. They're not. Nope, not one word. The opening story was about Joe's evil infrastructure plan, and it went downhill from there. It dawned on me they're going to ignore it in the hope that it goes away. They are equally as culpable as the yeehaws that stormed the Capitol on that dark day. Yeah, vanilla ISIS. But at least we've got folks like Steve out there paying attention. We all pay attention. This is the most attentive community to the political machinations of our day and our time in place that I've ever been familiar with. Oh, wait. It's grievance time at Mara Lardass. When isn't it?
Rhino former Congressman Barbara Comstock of Virginia, who lost her race conclusively to someone she should have easily beaten, now goes around telling Republicans how to get elected. She had no problems being with me while in the Oval Office or when she needed something. She and other Rhino losers like Mitt Romney, Little Ben Sasse, Lisa Murkowski, Liz Cheney, Adam Kinzinger, and Karl Rove are what's really wrong with the Republican Party, not the great MAGA Republicans, conservatives, and patriots. Aw, somebody didn't get his two scoops today. Oh. Poor Snookums. Jesus. And so, we've crossed the halfway point of the program. And we've got, what was it, 265 to go on Bruce's Memorial Challenge, and then the Summer of Robin Challenge, and the challenges from Joey and Giraffe. It'd be great if we could knock out one of the, just not start with Bruce and we'll work our way. Yes. Thank you, everyone. Thank you. But God, there's, let's see, it was last week, it was Friday, wasn't it? It was Friday when we were talking about the 33-year-old deputy in, what was it, Denver? Listen up, you fucksticks! Well, we've got we got more. Dear God, we got more. Let's see. Oh, where'd it go? We got an individual who claimed that, the Rona there it is. Of all the people, the goddess of irony. I've said before, they're in her hands, and it's not a place you want to be. But lo and behold, you remember Rick Wiles of True News, who has been inveighing against the vaccine, against the... she works quickly, the goddess does, because it was a little less than a month ago that he said, I will never get vaccinated. Well, over this past weekend, the people who pick their teeth with their toenail clippings over at True News announced that he'd caught COVID-19 and was on oxygen in the hospital. He had previously claimed that vaccine was a genocide that would wipe out hundreds of millions of people in the world, because of course he did. He fancies himself a bit of a prophet, I think. Rick Wiles does.
My spirit bears witness that this is a genuine plague that's coming upon the earth. And God is about to purge a lot of sin off this planet.
Oops.
Plagues are one of the last steps of judgment.
Yes.
The very last step is war. That's the last step. But plagues and pestilence, those are one of the steps of judgment. When nations refuse... Look at China.
China. Yeah, because, you know, God's a God of love, and so, you know, he drops some plague and some pestilence on people when they're absolutely not at fault. Yeah, it's God's love, y'all. Wait a minute. Some people are at fault.
Godless state, a godless government, godless communist government that persecutes Christians, forced abortions. All right, they're not... The Chinese communists are not virtuous people. They're godless. I'm not talking about the Chinese people. I'm talking about the government.
Right.
Okay.
Oh, well, as long as they're
clear. Look at the United States. Look at the rebellion, the spiritual rebellion that's in this country, the hatred of God, the hatred of the Bible, the hatred of righteousness.
Hatred of innocence.
Hatred of innocence.
Oh, yeah, golly. I mean, that's I get up every morning and, you know, no sing. I wake up, put on my makeup, and hate some righteousness and innocence, too. No singing. Yeah, mm-hmm. Sure.
There's vile, disgusting people in this country now.
Oh, we know who he's talking about, don't we?
Yes, we do.
Transgendering little children.
Told ya!
Perverting them. Look at the rapes and the sexual immorality. And
look who's perpetrating them!
Shh.
Don't tell Rick Wiles. I mean, if he's horizontally crucified right now, he probably, he can still hear, but don't tell him.
The people raping the little children are Christians like him.
Yes.
This, the filth on our TVs and our movies and folks.
And yet he's a purveyor of that same filth. Because, two guys kissing in a TV show, two women kissing in a TV show, is nothing. It is not filth. But what this sick freak does every day of his miserable, misbegotten, best part of him ran down his mama's leg life is the very definition of filth. The hatred, the vilification, the stochastic terrorism.
The death angel may be moving right now across the planet.
And it's a terrifying thing when the death angel walks by your door.
That's right. This is a time to get right with God. Repent of your sins. Confess Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior. If you've not been baptized, you need to.
And don't get the vaccine or anything.
Be baptized in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. The blood of Jesus Christ will protect you. Do not fear. If you're living right for God, if the blood of Jesus Christ is on you, you have no reason to fear this death angel. But those of you who are opposing the church of God, mocking God, attacking his servants, you better wise up. Because there's a death angel on the loose right now. You're going to get an attitude adjustment.
Yeah. Looks like somebody's getting his own attitude adjustment. And it's coming with canned oxygen. Of course, it's not quite the same thing when Rick Wiles gets the COVID as maybe it is when he was celebrating, a lawyer for the LGBTQ, QQIA plus community getting COVID.
I read today a 57-year-old lawyer in New York City passed away today. And his name is Richard Weber Jr. He is a senior lawyer. He was a partner at Gallo.
Vitucar.
Vitucci. Is it Vitucci Clar? Is that it?
Yes.
All right. In New York City. But here's why this is important. He was a senior lawyer for the LGBT Bar Association of New York, the lawyers who sue churches, the lawyers who sue ministries.
Well, yeah, they're not suing ministries and churches. They're suing to preserve civil rights, you fuckstick. Oh, wait, where did I learn that word?
I was pushing for integration of bathrooms.
Women,
men bathrooms for little kids even.
So potties! Oh, Jesus, not the potties! Look. Part of the reason I talk about my, and I'm very new to all of this, but part of the reason I talk about these things is because people want to know, you know, what's it like? I mean, there's a sense of curiosity, and when it's good faith curiosity, as I've said before, I'll answer just about any question. And I left my comfort zone, as I said. I left my comfort zone on Saturday. Because I am fortunate in the extreme to be
in a magnificent little community that is open and welcoming. And don't all the trans people move to Fayetteville, because we've already got housing problems enough as it is. But I could not have, if I had chosen a place to come out and begin living my authentic life, I could not have chosen a better place than Fayette County, West Virginia. Please, Goddess of Irony, leave me alone. But I left my comfort zone. I got as put together as possible, and Agnes gave me the thumbs up of go get 'em, girl, and once I got on the road, I realized that I was about to confront something that I had never confronted before, and that is a very simple thing. I confronted, or was confronted by, the great American transgender bathroom dilemma. And I was going to be gone long enough that this was really not, you know, it was not, that there's no way you can just hold it all day. Not trying to be graphic here. And so I learned some things. Because having spent the last several months being absolutely comfortable everywhere I go in my little community, suddenly it wasn't quite... a lot of the places I go in Fayetteville, the signs say, you know, we don't care who goes in here, just wash your fucking hands. But that's not the wider world. Y'all know. An anti-trans sports bill is now the law in the state of Florida, and my God, I wonder sometimes if all these states are doing this, hoping that sooner or later the ACLU will run out of lawyers. But there it was. I got as far as Princeton, West Virginia, where you turn east to go to Blacksburg, and reality hit. You're going to have to find somewhere, Robin. And it is a damning thing to have to live with. Nobody does this. Nobody does this by choice. It's existential. You get to a place where life becomes intolerable if you do not live your authentic life. And so, I realized something. As much as I frequently, almost always, despise Walmart, almost every Walmart has something that they like to call a family restroom. And it's got a male symbol and a female symbol on it. And, you know, there's a little baby changing station in there for appearance's sake. But it's just a one-holer restroom where you will be by yourself, and you can take care of what needs taken care of, and get the hell out. I personally think that that is corporate Walmart's way of creating a space that's not dangerous to people like me, without saying out loud, because of the mouth-walking knuckle breathers who pick their teeth with their toenail clippings, we've created a trans-safe space. And so, henceforward, when on the road, I'll be keeping track of where the, of all places, Walmarts are, and where the Targets are. Because maybe that means I won't be killed trying to go pee-pee. And I won't have to take my life in my hands just to deal with basic bodily functions that everybody has, whether they are cis male, cis female, trans female, non-binary, intersexed, asexual, just people. And these sick freaks celebrate the death who gave of his time to make marginalized people's lives better.
And now, he's not in the loving hands of his Savior. He's in the hands of the goddess of irony. And he's struggling to breathe. Because that death angel he talked about is flapping its wings right by his disgusting, bigoted, homophobic, transphobic ears. And that's what makes Pride Month so important. I'm learning, but I'm a quick study. Pride Month is so important that we be seen. Every stripe, every color in the Pride rainbow, be out and be seen. Be visible. So that we can then give courage to someone out there who yearns to live their authentic life, be it gay, bi, lesbian, trans, intersex, queer questioning, asexual, and everyone in between and on either end. At least that's the way I understand it so far. But these revolting attempts to keep people from attending to bodily functions, which is a way of telling us to stay the fuck home and not be visible, that we sicken people, that we make them uncomfortable, when their own discomfort comes from within, not us. But that urge on their part tells us so much more about them than it can ever, ever say about us. So gosh, Rick Wiles, I'm not under any requirement to be Christian about this. So, well, let's see. Thoughts and prayers, Rick. Thoughts and prayers. Tots and pears. Cottage cheese and pears. Filth, says Ron and Raleigh. Could you point the way to some of this filth on TV? I'm asking for a perverted friend. I know. It is, after all, Merca. Oh, and Darlene says thank you. Aw, thank you so much, Jessica. Great story, and thank you for your pearls of wisdom and support. And for the challenge in honor of Wanda the Honda. I actually learned to drive on a stick, my parents' blue Datsun, and busted the gearbox straight out of the gates. Suffice to say, my mom and dad were not pleased and insisted I get an automatic, so I did. The shit-color brown two-doors Toyota Celica sedan. I can't remember if I named it back then, but I love that freaking car. I appreciate your hand controls parallel to the stick shift, and great name for a car, by the way, Sabina. Thank you, Darlene. God, I love this community. The trans bathroom dilemma, Stephen in New York says, how do I figure out which bathroom to use? Being big gay Steve, they would like for you to stay home too, but you live somewhere that you're not expected to. Pride, what pride is all about, if you want to be openly gay, I use that term, but you get my meaning, or just want to live your life and be able to walk down the street safely and anonymously as an LGBTQIA+ person, that's what pride is all about. Thanks, Steve. Jack in Shreveport says, Rick, his ilk in the Catholic Church throughout history must have been suppressing news, along with keeping some great secrets about how the baptisms, which he just mentioned in the clip, along with the bread and wine and communion, must have certainly been used to sneakily pass on viruses and other sicknesses, implant high-tech tracking chips, possibly designed by the ancient aliens that have been documented on cable and available in book form in the past, and perform other mind-hacking tasks. To my knowledge, there's not been one whisper of the usage of these rituals to perform the same things the COVID virus and the COVID vaccine have been accused of. Never heard this brought up. Thank you, Jack.
And as for Dick Wiles, Steve notes, the U.S., India, and China, the place with the smallest population growth is the U.S. It's the Indians and Asiatics who hire population growth. So much for the plagues, etc., killing people off. I hate that motherfucker. And it comes with a graph, and Steve is right. It's them. It's they. And it was they who did this to us. We. Rick will be on bottled oxygen for a while, says Jeremy in Vermont. Wait, I've heard talk like this on the radio before. Is this the good God-fearing getting up news we've all been waiting for? Is Rush better and back on the air? No. Curiously enough, Jeremy, Rick, not Rick, the Rush, Rusty Limbaugh is still dead. Still not used to the reverse pineapple either. You'd think, but no, he's got a lot of reverse pineapples coming. Let's see here. Good news from Dave and the Blind. Christine is home. I had a great time at my sister's with Christine Sunday, and I'll be heading over to Christine's place on Thursday. Hopefully we'll be able to call into the program and she can thank everybody personally. My sister made a nacho bar Sunday to celebrate my nephew's graduation. Late nachos for breakfast. Yum! And so happy, Dave. Dan writes, I wanted to throw out a possible scenario that may explain Biden's lab investigation of the COVID-19 origin. This is just my opinion, but based on Biden's approach to governing thus far, it makes sense. If he puts forth an investigation of the lab leak, it keeps the MAGA idiots from saying he didn't look into it. If the investigation finds there was no lab leak, it puts the burbling idiots on defense. If they find that there was a lab leak, then fine, Trump was right. It can also be known that Obama cut off gain-of-function research funding to the NIH, who in turn collaborates with foreign health ministries for research and funding. Trump resumed gain-of-function research and funding when he took office, but pulled U.S. National Institutes of Health personnel out of China. So, yeah, Trump was right that he had a major role in indirectly supporting the lab leak. Biden wins either way by showing competent, responsible governing. And, P.S., after getting laid off in March of 2020, I finally got called back to work this week. As a live concert sound engineer, people in my profession were the first laid off and the last to go back to work. Your show's kept me sane over this last year of hell. The only upside is that I didn't contract COVID, was fully vaccinated back in April. I'll become a subscriber and plan to contribute once the checks start rolling in. I truly appreciate the Horn community. Thank you, Dan. And that's thank you so much. And it means so much to know, because, you know, when this thing broke over a year ago, you know, I said it was our stated purpose to continue and to survive and for all of us to survive and keep ourselves from losing our shit in the midst of all of this madness. And to that extent, with your kind words there, you let me know that we succeeded perhaps more even than we knew. And that is wonderful. And, you know, Biden continues to amaze, continues to surprise. Two things today. On the one hand, he is said to be shutting down oil and gas leases in the Arctic. Yay. Thank you. Ooh, look, responsible governance. And the other thing, of course, is that he went to Tulsa and hopes to invigorate a meaningful discussion about anti-ethnic violence in the United States. And maybe this is the beginning of, you know, we use the word reparations, but lawyers use the term damages. The recompense of damages is a central tenet to our judicial system. And when the court system itself was so corrupt that there was no way that justice could be had, I think things like statutes of limitations go out the damn window.
And that might be how it begins. Well, you know, nobody could sue. The court system was corrupt. And Oklahoma has a notoriously, historically corrupt judicial system. So I'm daring to think that maybe he's going to continue to surprise and amaze. Yeah. Rick Wiles. And then, of course, there's the MAGA hat store owner in Nash Vegas, who, of course, is also a cue ball. Over at the Tennessee Holler, those folks noticed that this woman was who ran a joint called Hat Works was promoting yellow stars of David with the words "not vaccinated" in them. She was so proud of it. Her name's Gigi Gaskins. And she said, y'all, they're in and they're selling fast. Not surprised. There are that many awful people in this country who would mock the murder of millions of human beings by imagining themselves somehow persecuted for not getting a vaccine. And then cancel culture, right? Because when it happens to a right-winger, it's cancel culture. No, this is consequences. Apparently she sold Stetson, and Stetson reached out and said, yeah, we're not going to be us and our distribution partners. We're not going to sell anything to her. Oh my God, it's the mark of the beast. You can't buy or sell without the mark of the beast. The vaccine is the mark of the beast. Aye! Jesus. But, you know, there we are. And now, because shit's getting worse in terms of consequences for Ms. Gaskins, who has in the past attacked transgender people, the coronavirus vaccine, liberals, Democrats, the election of Joe Biden, who bragged about having been in Washington, D.C. on the day of the insurrection, January 6th, and somehow is not facing charges. For the last 15 months, I've been pushing back on the government overreach, standing up to groupthink, trying to find reason in a sea of irrational. It's been 100% fighting the totalitarian march and power grab we're seeing now play out across the globe. Yet, curiously, at home and abroad, the only power grab going on has been the resurgence of fascism and right-wing authoritarianism. We've watched this play out for over a year, from the protests, the burnings, the lootings, taking cities hostage, desecrating monuments, dismantling our police, watching people get murdered in the name of justice. I'm not alone in being a target of the mob. Yeah, no. So let's see. Stetson's out. Dorfman Pacific's out. Gorin Brothers are out. Kangol Headwear is out. New York Hat and Cap Company are all out. And I don't know. I guess she's just going to have to feature nothing but fucking MAGA hats in her stupid little store. Good. Consequences, y'all. There's so much more. But I've kept someone waiting on hold for quite a while. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Robin, it's Dave in the Blind.
Well, hey, Dave, how are you?
I'm doing great, man. I had a lot of things happen this weekend, as I noted in my email.
Sounds like.
But I'm calling to comment on Richard King and his abuse of history.
Oh, you mean Will Cain?
Will Cain. He Well, maybe I called him Richard because, well, he's being a dick.
Yeah, right. Yes, but, Natch.
But I saw a clip on YouTube from a historian that has a channel, and he does a lot of work on the American Civil War and things like that. And he was talking about how at the time of the Battle of Gettysburg, there was stories going around the papers in the South that the South had actually won the battle because several Union generals had died. And he was discussing how these kinds of rumors and things would support the, in this case, the Confederate cause and keep them in the war when they thought, well, we're winning, when they actually militarily were not winning. They, and this kind of denial, as I see it, kept going out and has gone on for 156 years because you've got the maggots now, Cloud Emperor, the orange one, is still the president, even though he lost, even though he demonstrably got his ass handed to him. And they call themselves patriots. And my brother's one of these maggots. And I get to talking to him because my area of concentration when I was studying social studies under actual historians was the American Revolution up through the Constitutional Convention.
Well, you and Dr. Bill, you and Dr. Bill share that in common.
And it is not as clean and tidy as most Americans would like to believe. Because you're right. White supremacy, even in the non-slaveholding colonies that became non-slaveholding states, was at the root of a lot of the Constitution, because Native Americans were excluded from participation, and you had to be a white property-owning male to vote. Those were the people. Women weren't the people. Blacks weren't the people. And if you didn't own property, you weren't people either.
Women weren't the people. So, even white women weren't the people.
Right. And why they can say, well, that's what we're founded on. We're founded on exclusion. We are founded on exclusion, not inclusion. And that's why they have such a fucking hissy anytime rights are recognized. I hate to say expanded, because women, in my opinion, always had the right to vote. They've just been blocked culturally and legally from doing so because we exclude people we don't want to deal with. For example, and I'm seeing it in Georgia, I'm seeing it in Indiana with these voter suppression bills. Oh, it's integrity. That's like saying Jews for Hitler, you know, or, you know, that kind of thing. That's just nuts. If we really want to say that America should be inclusive, that we're the bright, shining city on the hill, then we have to build it every damn day. And I think that the Republican Party would have been supporting King George back in the day, because the folks that supported King George didn't want things to change. They wanted things to keep going along the way they had been going.
Well, it was working for them.
And as long as I noticed something, you know, my brother likes to call himself a patriot, and I often refer to him as an idiot. They sound similar. But the idea that patriots are some right-wing ass nuts and everybody else is evil, that's been going on for over 50 years. Ever since the John Birchers got a hold of the Republican Party. And unfortunately, they got their start here in Taliban Indianapolis. And the thing is, we are trying to become a more perfect union, and perfection takes change. It takes adjusting things that do not work, getting rid of them, and finding something that does. I can sympathize right down to the bathroom issue with trans people, because I always have to look for things like accessible bathrooms so that I can maneuver around. I know about the family restrooms in Walmart because I've made use of them because they've got the most room. I can get my wheelchair in and out, no problems. Try getting one in one of the men's rooms or one of the ladies' rooms in Walmart, and it's like going through an obstacle course. But even with disability rights movement, which sprang from the civil rights movement of the 50s and 60s, you got this stuff from the right wing of, well, you're asking for special rights. No, we're asking for the same damn rights you've got yourself. We're asking for those rights to be recognized for us. It's not a right that you have that we don't. It's a right that we have that you're denying. And I'm going to start questioning some Republicans in public about that, because it puts it on them. They're defending this glossed over view of the United States, and I'm trying to make them look at what they don't want to look at. You can't argue with them that they're unassailable. Well, nothing could be further from the truth. You must always refer to the rights that you have that you're being denied. They like to say, well, they're violating my First Amendment rights. Well, unless Walmart and Facebook and all the rest of corporate America is the United States government, which I can understand their confusion. Then no, they're not. The Constitution was drawn up by lawyers, for lawyers, because they wanted to justify the evils that they were doing. Oh, you got some nice land out there in the Ohio Valley.
Yeah, and they wanted to protect the... I mean, Charles Beard's economic interpretation of the Constitution is still a valid and viable argument. The Constitution was a wealth protection mechanism.
It's well over 200 years old, and it's a grift. It's not doing what it purports to do.
You and mean preserve and extend freedom?
Well, if it were, there was enough freedom breaking out during the Articles of Confederation period.
Yeah, democracy was breaking out all over.
I mean, John Hancock, the guy with the famous signature, he was president of the United States 3 times. Because under the Articles of Confederation, the president served for 1 year at a time. And he served 3 different times as president of the United States before the Constitution was ratified. So George Washington was not the first president of the United States.
And was not John Hancock the president of the Constitutional Convention itself?
No, that was actually George Washington.
Yeah, that was Washington. Hancock was president of the Continental Congress. Right, exactly. Okay. Thank you.
That's why his name appears first. And I don't know if it's apocryphal, but he's supposed to have said that he signed it large enough so that King George could read his signature without his spectacles.
Yeah, that's the story.
I think it's apocryphal, but it's a great line.
Yeah, it is. No, it's a fantastic line. It's a great story.
But John Hancock, I guess if I'm going to give him his proper due, President Hancock was president 3 times.
I did not know that. I did not know that, Dave. I've learned something new today. That's wonderful.
I think it was 3 times. Yeah, but he was at one time under the Articles of Confederation. John Hancock served as president of the United States. And I thought, that's cool. So I'm going to start referring to him as President Hancock. So... And when people try to correct me, I'll be like, no, under the Articles of Confederation. People tend to forget that period of time between the end of the war and the adoption of the Constitution. Because the Constitution's been around a lot longer. And it's no longer in living memory. Well, the Founding Fathers wanted this. Well, no, the Founding Fathers didn't want to be taxed and not represented in Parliament.
Bingo.
If the British government had granted parliamentary representation to the colonies, you would not have had the American Revolution. You might have had some other rebellions, but you wouldn't have had the American Revolution play out the way it did. And it all went down to things like taxes, because colonists had freedom of speech. You could criticize your colonial government, and there was some limited autonomy. We tend to gloss that over. But only about a third of the people were supportive of the revolution. About a third supported the crown. And then there was a third that it really didn't matter to them who was going to screw them over. they were going to get screwed. So when these right wingers go, but our country was founded on, I just cringe. Because
the minute those words emerge from their mouths, you know, well, here comes some bullshit. And see, they like their, Dave, they like their history happy and simple. But here's the trick.
Change those guys.
If your history is happy and simple, it ain't history. It's mythology. It's a children's fable. Because history is, by definition, a mess. That's why we still argue about it.
I mean, we dealt with when I was in college and I was training under these historians, I was told time and again, yes, history is revisionist because we're finding stuff out and we revise the story.
Right, and a perfect example. Yeah, a perfect example of that, Dave, is the disclosure about the 215 indigenous children found dead and buried in a residential school in Canada. I mean, it's not U.S. history, but you know what? Now you have to revise history.
It has a reflection in the Indian school movement in the United States.
Right, as Ron and Raleigh
pointed out. There's a cemetery in the school.
Yeah.
And it goes back even further. You talk about the dead in Canada, some of which weren't even recorded at the time. Well, you have the same problem with the laundry system in Ireland, where pregnant girls went. And
because God is love, y'all.
They're finding, I know they found about 10 years ago, they found bodies in what had been a well on one of those laundries' properties. Yeah. And there were like 7 babies, skeletons in that well.
But the church protects life.
Robin, when I was in school, when I was going to Catholic school as a little boy, I would regularly give a quarter to the missions so that they could baptize kids in other countries. And I was told that this was a good thing. I'm beginning to question whether it was a good thing.
Well, it was probably covering up for a few, you know, 100 million sins or so. Let's not quibble.
Of course. But when you're told as a 5 or 6 year old child, your quarter is going to save a soul. Well, that's pretty powerful stuff.
Sure it is. And don't think for a minute that they didn't damn well know.
Yeah.
I carried a quarter to church every Sunday.
And okay, so there's an equivalent in the Baptist church. I kind of figured there was.
Oh God, are you kidding? Lottie Moon? Holy crap. Lottie Moon Missionary Society?
Yeah. And you're always told you're doing a good thing, you're helping the Lord's work.
Oh.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And when you're a fairly religious child, you know, I went to Mass on Sundays. I prayed. And I knew that my little prayers were heard. Because my mother once told me to pray for a white Christmas, and we got 7 inches of snow in 24 hours. Thereafter, I got blamed for any blizzard that happened, including the blizzard of 78. So there is a downside of that. The goddess of irony had me in her tender loving hand.
Oh, yeah.
But But I will be going over to Christine's on Thursday, and hopefully we'll be able to call in.
Well, that will be lovely if you're able to.
Thank you. But I will give you the heads up so that you know. But, yeah, she's got her air fryer. She's snuggling her cats. The first thing she did was she took a shower and soaked up, because evidently the nursing home had a 2-shower-a-week policy.
What the?
And she goes, frankly, I stink. And she went home and got in the shower, and she scrubbed off, and she said, I feel so much better.
Oh, it's amazing. It just, and, yeah.
And she will be going up to Chicago in July, they think.
For rehab.
It's just a matter of how soon she can get her fingers to work so she can dress herself so that she'll be able to hold the lead on the guide dog, and so that she can learn to read Braille, read and write Braille, which she's looking forward to. She's like, it's another language. I get to learn another language. I'm like, yeah.
She's got a great attitude.
Yeah. And it's going to carry her through. She's got an appointment with a low vision specialist to see if there's any lens corrections they can do to help her read. That's the goal, so that she can read large print text right now. She's basically given up on driving. But I say as long as she's improving, she'll be fine. The question comes when she plateaus. But like you say, she's a fighter. She has a great attitude. Evidently, when she couldn't clean herself, she pressed the button and would have to wait and wait and wait and wait and wait. That's one reason she put her foot down. They wanted her to stay until she went to Chicago. And she said, absolutely not. There's nothing you're doing here that I can't do at home. So she had them send her home. But she'll tell you all about that.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, Dave. And I really appreciate the conversation. I'm glad you called in.
I hope it helped the conversation, as long as it kept you from singing.
Well, right. I mean, we have priorities here. And that's a big one.
That's right.
Keeping the horn on the air is priority one, and priority 1A is, and she doesn't sing while it is.
No, you can sing in the shower, okay?
I'm forbidden from that too. I mean, only if there's nobody in the house, and that includes the dog and the cats. You know, they don't like it either.
Oh, so you have been roundly chastised.
Yeah, I did.
Such a thing.
I did something over the weekend that I have never done before. I did karaoke. And I was a horror.
Oh, my God.
I was a horror.
Survivors?
Oh, there was weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth, Dave. Here's another call coming in. I'll try that, and then we will talk soon, hopefully Thursday. All right, Dave?
All right. Bye.
Bye now. Hey, welcome to the program.
Oh, hi, Robin. Sorry to interrupt an interesting conversation.
Oh, no.
Briefly, there's a book called Kill Switch about the filibuster. It's kind of new, I guess. I heard an interview with the author, and he was saying that during the period of the Articles of Confederation, they had a supermajority rule to pass anything.
Yeah.
And then when they got to the Continental Convention, they said, no way are we going to have that as part of the Congress.
We'll never get anything done.
And that's exactly what happened. And I heard some expert on TV yesterday say, well, they're not doing the filibuster the way the founders intended. And I just screamed at the TV. You know, I said, they didn't want the filibuster, fool.
Well, I mean, we do know this much. We know, you know, they did have it in the House, and they had to get rid of it twice because they couldn't get anything done.
And that's where we stand right now.
Yeah. And curiously, the House of Representatives did not disappear in a puff of smoke and cease to exist just because a noisy racist minority couldn't control things anymore. That's not to say they didn't continue to control things in the House.
I don't know if you ever get a chance to listen to Tom Hartman, but they've been talking a lot about Joe Manchin lately, so it's real interesting. I wish they'd get you on the air on his show.
In a way,
not too many people.
I hate to say it, but in a way, it's kind of a fruitless exercise to talk about Joe Manchin. You know?
Yeah, I know. That's the way it seems. All right, I'll let you and Dave get back to it. Thanks. Bye.
All right, you have a good one. Take care. Bye now. And so, I wanted to make a little announcement. I told you that I'm trying to walk the walk and talk the talk. And toward that end, I've got a meeting that is starting. It's virtual. It's online. Starting right now. And so I'm going to close out the program a half hour early so I can be at this meeting and try to do the right thing. And my God, Wednesday is already stacked up with content, and Wednesday isn't even here. I'll close out with a note from our buddy Robert. Big fun in Australia. Victoria is in lockdown. What started as a 7-day lockdown looks like it's being extended for another 7 days. All because authorities now believe it's being spread via stranger-to-stranger contact. And to top it all off, the Indian variant has been identified in Victoria. How that got here, I just don't know. I thought our international borders were still closed. So it looks like the whole country might be going into full lockdown any day now. It's all big fun in Australia. It's got to be intensely frustrating. But if it's getting loose again, the only way to have a chance against it is lockdown. And that's intensely frustrating, but it might be it's also quite possibly more responsible. If we had locked down in earnest instead of the half-assed, mealy-mouthed, the complete with the mewling and puking from the people in Michigan who wanted to mow their snow, remember that back in, what was it, April of last year? We might not be where we are, and nearly 600,000 people might not be dead. But that's me, and I'm cranky. So, you know, it happens. We will close the program down 265 in trying to cover Bruce's memorial challenges. These challenges will remain on the table, and maybe we'll get after it. We'll take out another bite of it tomorrow, hopefully. And I don't have any meetings tomorrow night, so yay. There will be these little interruptions from time to time. Like I said, because I'm trying to be a better person and trying to pay back for all the goodness that I've received. So thank you again. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatsoever manner you choose. Thanks to our subscribers at Patreon and PayPal. We'll do the Patreon thank yous tomorrow. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Thank you so very much. Thank you, Charlene. Thank you, Jude. Thanks for the challenges. Thank you to Chris. Thank you to Ralphs. Thank you so much to Dennis in Columbus. Thank you, one and all. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, brand new Fresh Malloy on the way, 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. And the best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is headon.live. Thank you. John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Please stay safe. Please, if you haven't already, get your vaccine. And remember, like Paul from Parts Unknown said, your vaccine is your last line of defense, not your first. And so we continue to take our precautions. And, you know, if somebody comes towards you saying, "Our Star of David, I ain't got no vaccine stickers, is in. They're going like hotcakes." Avoid that person like the plague. Because she is. Later, y'all.